Good afternoon. This is Bob Krueger with Thought for Food for November of 2021. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully it will be of interest to everyone. Dates to remember this month begin with All Saints Day on the 1st and then the end of Daylight Saving Time on the 7th. What did you save with this plan? The United States Marine Corps celebrates their 246th birthday on the 10th. The next day is the 11th, is Veterans Day, when we have the opportunity to thank any veteran you know for their service to our country. And this year, Thanksgiving is the 25th. The 28th is the first day of Advent, and the beginning of Hanukkah starts at sundown. I have a birthday on the 29th. We begin this program with a column written by Bee Wilson. Her column appears in the Wall Street Journal under the name Table Talk, and she begins, "Who eats fresh strawberries with their morning bowl of cereal? Almost no one, in my experience. For one thing, strawberries would make the cornflakes pink and soggy. There's also the fact that a person eating cereal for breakfast is usually in a rush at the kitchen table and doesn't have time to get the berries, wash, and slice them. A quick sliced banana, maybe. Strawberries, unlikely. Yet, the picture on the front of the cereal boxes often include big, succulent strawberries as a serving suggestion. And why is this? Dr. Giles Yen, a geneticist at the University of Cambridge who researches obesity, argues that the healthful berries on the cereal box are there to convey the illusion that the cereal contains fewer calories. And when we pick that cereal from the supermarket shelf, the strawberries make us feel like we're selecting something fresh and slimming rather than a carton of refined carbs and sugar. Strawberries on a cereal box are an example of something called negative calorie syndrome, as Dr. Yen outlines in his book, Gene Eating, The Science of Obesity and the Truth About Diets, which will be published in England in December. When we see a healthy food paired with an unhealthy one, we will judge the overall meal to have fewer calories than if we see the unhealthy food by itself. There's negative calorie illusion explains a lot about the crazy way that kids us about food. Back in my dieting days, I truly believed I could wash calories away if I drank enough Diet Coke. The concept of negative calorie illusion comes from Alexander Cherney of the Kellogg School of Management in Northwestern University, who did a series of experiments involving hamburgers and published results in the Journal of Consumer Psychology in 2010. Dr. Cherney found that if you asked people to estimate the calories in a hamburger, they will usually estimate more calories for a burger by itself than a burger with a few sticks of celery or a carrot salad on the side. Many of the participants imagined that a burger by itself was around 600 calories, whereas they reckoned that a burger plus celery was more like 500 calories. It's as if we believe the presence of healthy food actually cancels out the calories in the unhealthy food. Dr. Cherney calls this the dieter's paradox. Once I was aware of this phenomenon, I started to see it everywhere. As Dr. Yen points out, the negative calorie illusion explains most of the serving suggestions in the supermarket, whether it's the fresh cilantro leaf on a carton of instant ramen noodles or the broccoli on a bottle of squeezable cheese. It also got me to thinking about some kids' meals. They usually consist of something like fish sticks or pizza with a hefty portion of fries and a very tiny side dish of vegetables, one tiny floret of broccoli or two carrot sticks. The vegetables are clearly there to make busy parents feel better about feeding their kids junk for dinner. It's like the salad garnished with a steak dinner, which disguises the fact that you're eating a week's worth of red meat at one go. A negative calorie illusion only works because we're so hung up on the idea of good and bad foods. It's true that most of us eat nothing like enough fruits and vegetables, so we won't fix the problem of a tiny garnish here and there. We can't bear to admit to ourselves the terrible truth that, yes, we do something like eating French fries, so we add a few green beans to the plate. like a fig leaf to cover up our gastronomic immodesty. The real challenge is to think of greens as something so delicious you eat them for their own sake rather than a penance you chomp through before you get to the good stuff. Question, how many of us have negative calorie illusions? I found another of Mrs. Wilson's columns titled Throwing Away the Kitchen Timer. I think you'll like her message. The late food writer Verda Mae Smarts Grosvenor used to say she could tell when fried chicken was done by simply listening to it. She could gauge expertly the moment the chicken was crispy and golden from the particular sizzling sound that made in the oil. Sometimes she once told an interviewer, people would say, tell me something real, like, what is it, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, or whatever? And I say, you've got to listen to the sound of the grease, listen to the music. When learning to cook, many of us put our faith in specific timings as the best means to get reliable and precise results. We learn to boil pasta for exactly 10 minutes and to roast chicken for 20 minutes a pound. But the more meals I cook, the less solid and reliable it seems. After 10 minutes, pasta may be perfectly al dente or it may be overboiled. It depends on the brand, and the only way to know for sure is to fish out a piece and taste it. If you trust the clock more than you trust yourself, you'll often end up with a disappointing dinner. The very best cooks are the ones who feel confident enough to throw away the kitchen timer. The timing in a recipe should never be the final word, not least because the recipe's author has no idea what it is to cook in your kitchen with your particular stove and pans. A food expert has suggested that because stoves and ovens vary so widely in size and power, we should regard timings as guidelines rather than a fixed dogma. And here's an example regarding steak. If a recipe says sear the steak until deeply golden brown 4 to 5 minutes, and after 5 minutes have passed your steak is only slightly golden, continue to sear until it reaches the visual indication. Cooking by the clock can let you down if you stick to it rigidly. I've been making crepes for so many years now, I thought my formula couldn't fail me. 30 seconds on the first side, then flip and give it 10 seconds more. At home, these timings gave me perfect lacy brown crepes every time, assuming I had started with a pan hot enough to make the butter sizzle. But this summer, while visiting with relatives, I made crepes in an unfamiliar kitchen with an unfamiliar stove and pan, and suddenly my timings were useless. After the first 30 seconds, the first crepe was raw and pale. 2 minutes later, it was flabby around the edges. In all, it took 3.5 minutes to brown the first side and 1 minute on the second side. If I had trusted the kitchen timer, there'd have been no breakfast that day. I'm not saying that we should never use timers in the kitchen. No chunk of time ever feels quite as blessed as the one when you have put something in the oven and set a timer for an hour, knowing your dinner is cooking itself in your absence. And when baking a cake, you don't want to be constantly opening the oven to check for visual cues. As a rule of thumb, I tend to set the timer 5 to 10 minutes less than the recipe calls for, to allow for checking and smelling to see if it's done ahead of the time. My wife uses that method when she bakes a cake. Time is a subjective measure as well as an object one, and this is true in the kitchen as anywhere else. If you ask me, the best kitchen timer is music because it makes you stop counting the minutes and start enjoying them. I like to think any time a kitchen task that I find a bit tedious using songs rather than timers. Washing the dishes usually takes me 2 Beatles songs or 1 Stevie Wonder. That's about 6 minutes, but it goes by in a flash. I would really like to talk to Mrs. Wilson. The pandemic has not slowed down prolific triangle restaurateur Giorgio Bakhtassis. In the past year, he closed and reopened one restaurant, announced and opened another, and started work on 2 more. Now he plans to open another this fall, bringing a new concept to Durham for the first time in years. Mr. Bakhtassis will open Krill, a Asian concept near the popular Paulisaurus Brewery in Durham. Krill will move into a space next door to Durham Tech Company, Smashing Boxes. Krill draws on Mr. Bakhtassis' travels through Taiwan, Thailand and Hong Kong, trips made during the past 10 years, and linger in his memory of the tastes of lemongrass and ginger. Travel has been my home of inspiration, he said. I was mesmerized in Taiwan, snaking through alleys and going into markets. There's a vibrant energy and ingredients we've never faced with this part of the world. The name krill comes from the tiny sea crustacean, which is a significant source of food for some of the largest creatures on the earth. Think whales. In that relationship, he sees small, healthy things serving larger purposes. It has enormous amounts of omega-3 fatty acids with incredible benefits for blue whales and other animals that live and thrive on it, he said. Krill will be a smaller restaurant for Mr. Bakatsis, less than 3,000 square feet. There should be room in the dining room for 50, he says, with additional seating on an outdoor patio. The space was already built for a previous restaurant project that never opened, so the upfit has been quick. At this point, as the Krill staff is still being assembled, he talks about the menu in broad terms. Expect broths and noodles, seafood as well as local pork and dishes that travel well during takeout times. Krill will also specialize in making its own sauces and pastes, like the chili paste sambal. A simple broth speaks to me a lot more than food, a lot of food on a plate, he said. The body has a way of knowing what nourishes itself. The dining room will include a bar and four or five seats, and a kitchen window is a sort of chef's table. Krill will open in a part of Durham with few restaurants, but with several new apartment buildings and more on the way. Durham in that area is the discovery zone that's being discovered, he said. I like the accessibility there and the residential community that's going there, the walking community. He said he found this location while driving through Durham one day and decided to get in touch with the property owner. I'm non-traditional in the way I find locations, he said. One day I was driving around and it was right there. I'd seen the building and everything going around. Then I walked into the place. I fell in love with it. I instantly thought of Asian flavors and was salivating in my mind. The space kind of winked at me. It's been a busy 3 years for Mr. Bakatsis. He opened his first Raleigh restaurant, Rosewater, at the end of 2019. And then through the pandemic, he moved his popular Greek tavern, Kipos, in Chapel Hill, opened Italian restaurant, Osteria Giorgi, announced a French restaurant, East End Bistro, in Raleigh, and is now opening Krill. It's been a marathon, and if you don't have leadership and the team willing to do the right thing, it can be difficult, he said. The teams we have, the leadership we have, has been enormous. They're powerful individuals, being able to close and come back and reopen. It makes it all worthwhile. While the impact of the pandemic lingers and continues to change the restaurant business, Mr. Bakatsis said he opened his restaurants as a means of escape. My devotion is serving the community in a way that's small. It doesn't seem to me that any of his projects are small. The brisket invasion continues in the Triangle's escalating barbecue scene as a Texas-style newcomer plans a brick-and-mortar restaurant. Started this year as a barbecue pop-up, Damp Good Barbecue, announced in late August, it will join the Crafton Food Hall in Clayton, slated to open next week. Dampf Good, that's spelled D-A-M-P-F, takes its name from Dick Dampf, a Research Triangle Park technology salesman who, inspired by months of working and smoking meats at home, is making a career shift into barbecue. Having lived in St. Louis and Dallas, Dampf said his barbecue vision begins with brisket. Brisket can't be cooked the same way you cook pork, he said. It's done a lot differently down in Texas. It's that style of cooking, using offset smokers, that sets brisket apart. For nearly the entire history of North Carolina barbecue, pitmasters here have held very little concern about how things are done in Texas. This is pork country, land of shoulders and whole hog and sauces heavy on the vinegar. But there's an influx of brisket and beef ribs, even from native North Carolinians, but quickly changed the state's barbecue landscape. Now all that matters is whether or not it's good and cooked with wood. While Texans may have lit the fire of today's barbecue trends, barbecue restaurants like Prime Barbecue and Lawrence Barbecue have also set out to do with smoking brisket. Mr. Dampf aims to be the next to bring the taste of Texas to the Triangle. I'm hoping people are receptive for real Texas barbecue, he said. The biggest difference for us is how we smoke the meat. We're never going to use propane or elected assistant smokers. We're going to have people here running the fires around the clock. It's a lot of work, but we will never compromise on style and how we cook. Barbecue has been a lifelong love, he said, has been the idea of owning his own business. Mr. Damp started out cooking on a drum-style smoker and switched to offset, the style preferred in Texas, where a firebox sends smoke across the meat and smoker and out a stovepipe. After years of smoking meat as a pastime, Mr. Damp sold his first plate of brisket this past year at the NC State's Fairgrounds Weekend Market. From there, it's been a series of pop-ups throughout the Triangle and enough sellouts to make him consider making a go of it. When COVID hit and we were at home, I just wanted to be self-employed, Mr. Damp said. I wanted to build a better working environment for myself and family and wanted to be able to give that to other people. That's a big drive. It might only be four or five families who work with us, but I'm really excited to be the boss I always wished I had. Mr. Damp moved somewhat quickly from hobby barbecue in his backyard to running a pop-up to working on a restaurant. He said he wants to open a brick-and-mortar operation within a year, something with outdoor space and tables for larger groups to gather. The Craft and Food Hall in Clayton nearly fit the bill. They've got a very similar idea in mind. It's a food hall, but a bit different than the typical food hall, he said. We really wanted to have a space that focuses on family and the outdoors. And that's what barbecue is all about, bringing people together. Now he uses a 500-gallon smoker made of a retired propane tank. For Clayton, Mr. Damp will add two 1,000-gallon-sized smokers. He said his briskets and ribs have about 12 to 15 hours to cook. The ribs are just salt and heavy amount of black pepper, he said, with pork ribs getting a coating of a few spices. The flavor the customers like is from the smoke. People will come up and ask, what's in your rub? And the bulk is just salt and pepper. It's the smoke where you get what that sweet flavor. The Damp menu will always include brisket and pulled pork shoulders and beef ribs at least twice a week. Specials will include pastrami for Reuben sandwiches and a Texas import that plays up North Carolina's bounty of pork, the pork steak, thick cuts of Boston butts, smoked and browned. It's something I'm really excited about, Mr. Damp said. You don't see it here, but I like a good pork steak better than a good beef steak. Look for spare ribs, as well as sides including coleslaw, a smoked mac and cheese, brisket baked beans, and pasta salad. All this makes me hungry. Welcome to the Triangle, Mr. Damp. Has been said before, the Triangle seems to draw restaurants like Honey Draws Flies. One of the most popular barbecue spots in Charlotte is opening a new location in Raleigh. Midwood Smokehouse has announced plans to join a new large restaurant in Raleigh's Smoky Hollow, a Kane Realty development anchored by a Publix grocery store just off of Peace Street. This will be the sixth Midwood location and the first restaurant in the Triangle for Charlotte's FS Food Group, named for owner Frank Schiavelli. We've had our sights on Raleigh for a few years after having previously success there with Bad Daddy's and are looking forward to officially bringing Midwood Smokehouse to this market, said Mr. Schiavelli. Our pitmasters and crews look forward to serving some of the best barbecue at what will be our sixth location in the Carolinas. Midwood Smokehouse first opened a decade ago in Charlotte's Plaza Midwood neighborhood, from which it takes its name. FS Food Group has since added three more locations in and around Charlotte, plus another in Columbia, South Carolina. Mr. Schiavelli founded the Bad Daddy Burger Bar chain, eventually selling it in 2015. In an interview He said he hopes to open the Raleigh-Midwood smokehouse early next year, pending construction delays. Midwood is best known for its smoked brisket, a product of his barbecue research in Texas. But the menu will still reflect North Carolina serving chopped pork barbecue made from hickory smoked shoulders. Other notable items are spare ribs and a small plates of smoked meatballs, nachos, and barbecue tacos. I don't feel like I had to pick one style. I want to make great brisket and great chopped pork barbecue, Mr. Schiavelli said. Midwood is strongly influenced by Texas and North Carolina. In a first for the brand, the Raleigh Midwood will add a tortilla maker, leaning into the restaurant's popular barbecue tacos made with flour tortillas. The Tex-Mex barbecue fusion is natural, so we're going to put a tortilla machine in there, he said. It goes well with what we're doing in barbecue. The Raleigh Midwood Smokehouse will be a sizable at 4,125 square feet, including patio seating on the inside of Smoky Hollow's pedestrian walkway. In a news release, FS Food Group named Matthew Berry, a native of barbecue-crazed Lexington, as executive pitmaster. Coy DeRamas, a former Bad Daddy manager, will be the managing partner of the Raleigh Midwood. In Raleigh, the new Midwood will join a burgeoning barbecue scene. The capital city is currently a barbecue hotspot as a handful of high-profile restaurants open, including Sam Jones Barbecue, Lawrence Barbecue, Longleaf Swine, and the Barbecue Lab. The way the food business is, things cycle back, Mr. Schiavelli said. Old ideas come back in barbecue if you stick to doing a good job. And what we are doing is reminding people of that. He's planning more expansions in Raleigh, specifically Italian restaurant Little Mama's and the Cuban-Peruvian concept Cali Soul. Hopefully, we'd like to do more restaurants in Raleigh, Mr. Schiavelli said. This area is booming, and so it seems we have another barbecue place to visit. The former Kroger store building off of U.S. 70 in Garner will soon get a new life as a Lidl grocery store. Construction is still underway at the site, which houses a Kroger store until it closed in August of 2018. Building permits with the town of Garner show the owner of the 2680 Timber Drive property as Brixmore Property Group. Brixmore added Lidl to its portfolio early this year and opened a store in Glassburg, New Jersey in March. A large yellow sign on the fence surrounding the store reads, Lidl, see you soon, with Brixmore's name on the corner of the sign. Brixmore owns and operates about 400 retail centers across the country, with the corporate headquarters in New York. The Garner permits were out of a Brixmore office in Roswell, Georgia. The German-based grocery chain opened a store in Apex earlier this year, its 10th location in central North Carolina. They have stores in Raleigh, Cary, Wake Forest, Sanford, Rocky Mount, Fayetteville, and Wilson, as well in the western part of the state, but has yet to venture into Durham or Chapel Hill. Lidl is similar in concept to Aldi, another German-based grocery chain, who have at least 13 stores in the Triangle. Lidl and Aldi stores are smaller than most U.S. chain grocery stores such as Harris Teeter, Food Lion, Publix, and Wegmans, and they sell a larger selection of private label goods. Lidl differs a bit from Aldi's in that Lidl stores have an indoor bakery. They also sell fresh flowers and European specialty items. Aldi has a location in Garner at 750 Timber Drive. A 2020 study of grocery prices in the Long Island, New York area, conducted by a professor at UNC's Keenan Flagler Business School, found that Lidl had prices on a par with Aldi, Costco, and Walmart, and their prices were lower than the prices at Trader Joe's, Target's, and BJ's Warehouse Club. The study also found that Lidl's entry into the Long Island grocery market caused other grocery chains to lower prices. A similar study conducted in 2018 showed the presence of Lidl in other parts of the country had the same effect. Do you know your apples? Do you know which are the best cooked, baked, or in a pie? What kind of apple do you enjoy eating raw? It seems to me that a new variety of apples comes to the market every year. And here's some information about a number of apple varieties. Braeburn. This apple is a descendant of the Granny Smith, but also slightly sweeter. The Cortland are recommended as good for a pie making. Golden Delicious. If you had to pick just one apple, this is the variety many would choose. Granny Smith. Firm and very tart, this variety is the go-to for many when it comes to pies because it keeps its shape extremely well. But it isn't exactly known for its flavor, so they best used in combination with sweeter and more flavorful apples. Honeycrisp. These apples can be a little pricey at times because they're more difficult to grow and have a lower yield, but their flavor can't be beat. Johnna Gold or Jonathan. Crunchy, sweet, and tart. Johnna Gold is a cross between a Jonathan and a Golden Delicious apple. They're a good variety to use in a mixture with Granny Smith's. Pink Lady. This super crisp apple, certainly sturdy enough to hold its shape when baked. It's a nice mix of sweet and tart and boasts a vibrant skin, hence the name. Winesap. This heirloom variety is said to have been around for centuries. Winesap apples are highly aromatic with a balanced sweet tart taste and gets its name from their distinctive spicy wine-like flavor, according to specialty product stores in San Diego. I found it difficult to find in this area. Another new variety I've seen locally is called the Snapdragon. We left out my favorite, the Gala, which is great to eat raw. In 2017, the Gala passed the Red Delicious as the most popular apple in the United States. The Red Delicious is no longer delicious. The growers had promoted this apple as flavorful, but created an apple that was good to look at, but it's no longer delicious. Several new varieties include the Jazz, the Sweet Tango, two varieties of Lucy, the Red Skin Lucy Rose and the Gold Skin Lucy Glow. Both have naturally red flesh. So many apples, so little time. So what's that saying about an apple today? Also at this time of the season, we'll mention six fruits and vegetable winners. Sweet potatoes. It's hard to find a food with more beta carotene, which our bodies convert into vitamin A and potassium. In a mood for a potato, think orange. Even without the skin, the sweets have twice the fiber of white potatoes. Brussels sprouts. Hello, vitamins C and K, fiber, lutein, potassium, folate, and magnesium. Brussels are hard-working little cabbage lookalikes. One you can do is shred the Brussels sprouts for this recipe in a food processor and use the grating or the shedding disc, or grab a bag of pre-shredded sprouts.